A wonderful good morning to Dr. Katja Bartsch. And I'm so grateful that we have the chance to talk right now because I know you have a really tight schedule. So I would love if you just could introduce yourself. Who is Katja? What moves you? What moves your heart?
Thanks for having me, first of all. I'm really excited to talk to you and see you here online and talk with you about what we're about to talk. That's a good question. What moves me? I am a very curious person, I would say. So my curiosity probably moves me through life. So I like being excited about things. I like learning new things. And I like to move in different directions and be free that way. So I would say curiosity, movement, and staying open to everyone I meet and everything I learn. I think those are things that are carrying me through my personal life, but also probably through my professional life.
This is so cool because I think there are lots of similarities, and to follow that curiosity that moves you forward. This is so cool. And we had like a little pre-conversation before we got started the podcast, and I would love if we just like have a really brief and short history, because we have history finally, which is around about 20, 24 years. So we know each other for a really long time, and it has a lot to do finally with lately with movement.
It does. It's a pretty long history, actually. So we two know each other, if memory serves right, from triathlon. So we both have a triathlon background, coming from the beautiful town of Roth in Germany, and we used to train for the same club or within the same club, and I think even at some point probably within the same team, racing for the same team. And so we swam together and rode our bicycles together and ran together, even though you were always a lot quicker than me on the racetrack when it came to running.
On the bike.
That's how I remember. Like, running, you definitely were a lot faster than me. So that was our origin story from triathlon. But then from there, and that was 20, 25 years ago, from there, our paths crossed multiple times again. So at some point, we even lived in the same building,
exciting,
incidentally.
We started
and
to do yoga.
yeah, then the, then we both at some point started to do yoga. And we also both found a very deep love for Hawaii, Kauai specifically. And so we don't see each other a lot. We live rather close by. We grew up in the same area, but we don't see each other a lot on a daily basis. But our paths cross.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, our paths cross regularly.
It's so cool. And I really remember the time when we lived in the same building. And so we share, and I can tell you guys, she is really like so wonderful with books. So if you need a book, go to Katja. Or just like movies. And I clearly remember that my ex-husband, he had that role for rolling. And now we're coming closer to the topic of yours, that you started studying sports science. And I admired you so much because what she did, guys, she really traveled almost every single day from our hometown to Munich, which is really not like very close. She did that for your goal and for your purpose and for like what you really are interested in, and to dive really deep into something and to explore that. This is what I really admire on you. So could we maybe just like make now a little switch to the main topic we want to talk about? Because you're a sports scientist. Now you finally became a doctor. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And you also a yoga teacher. You figured out. So your claim is, or your slogan is something like, maybe everything connects. So do you want to talk about that? So like that path, you explored things and you came from yoga and body and triathlon and then to the sports science and to explore the body. And you are like, I would say, I hope I'm right, but I guess you are really a little freak about anatomy, and I love how you are able to explain those things. I could like Katja, she's reading something and then she knows that and then she can explain that. So it's just like, so please take us into that Katja world of eventually everything connects.
Yeah, I love that slogan. I truly do. And for me, maybe taking it one step back. We talked about our triathlon passion from way back when already, but I did not, after finishing high school, I did not go to study sports science right away. So I spent a couple of years in the corporate world, but found that my tolerance for doing something I didn't 100% align with was it's just not very big. And we talked about that before we came on here. And that holds true until today. So I think that's one of my core values also, to really do what I love doing. And the body and moving and being active has always been part of myself. So after a couple of years in that corporate scenario, I went back to school and started from scratch again, studying sports science, found deep love for the body, which I had in practice experienced before. So I've always been, I would say, in sync with my body. I have a very good relationship with my body, and that probably reflected in my love for studying the body, and then also eventually explaining what's happening in the body. I think that's my really big passion. And over the course of the years, a bit more specifically, I fell in love with fascia, which is connective tissue. So within the field of anatomy, I would say that connective quality of fascia then also kind of drew my attention or really fascinated me. And that's where I'm still active in today when it comes to the research. What I'm also doing and what kind of developed in parallel to that is teaching yoga and refining that self-awareness, body awareness, that reflective capacity maybe for myself. So that kind of developed in parallel. And what I really, really enjoy doing the most is connecting those two worlds. So bringing what I am studying from a sports science background in my own research and translating that into bits and pieces that are attractive to digest, and bringing that to adult continuing education, like yoga teacher trainings and workshops and stuff like that. I think that's what I enjoy the most, honestly, to translate that and make it meaningful to everyone in practice who's interested, and deeply fascinated, like I am, about the mind-body system.
So your main topic is like the tissue that everything is connected. It's like it's all over in our system and related probably to lots of things. I just like had like a one day training. I didn't study it, but it was like so fascinating to see how that works. And I'm sometimes struggling with the word. It's work word. It's fascia.
Some pronounce it fascia. I prefer saying fascia.
Fascia.
Yeah.
So, would you like to take us more into your world of fascia?
Yeah, sure. So
Look like
fascia,
dive deeper into the body. How would
dive a
you
bit deeper there. Yeah.
inside?
So fascia is one type of tissue, and actually the discussion around what it specifically is or around its definition is still ongoing. So it's a very current topic, which I also find very attractive. So I like being part of that discussion. And it's a tissue that is connecting literally everything in the body. So that functional aspect of it, that it connects different body parts, is one of its most prominent features. And historically, it's a lot of the white stuff. If you cut up a body, it's not muscle, it's not the organ tissue, it's not the it's not organ tissue, it's not muscle. So it's the white stuff, the soft connective tissue. And that's been thrown away in the past because it was thought to have no real function. And today, with new technologies and new understanding, we have a much deeper appreciation and acknowledgement of that tissue because it is a sensory organ. So part of our bodily sensation probably origin in connective tissue, in tendon, in ligament, in thoracolumbar fascia, that's the low back fascia. So a more all-encompassing definition would count all of these things as fascia. And it has mechanical functions. So it's really connecting different body parts, helping with biomechanics. We know that immune system aspects are also related to the fascia, and then there's also hormone receptors, so also connections to the endocrine system. So many different body systems connect to fascia, and that's what makes it so interesting, the nervous system, not only in its sensory capacity. So a lot of different aspects that come together and that connect different bodily functions. And I think there has been a bit of a hype over the last years, and that is now kind of, I don't know, subsiding a little bit, but we are still a lot further than we were a couple of years ago, and we just have a much clearer picture. And I think what now remains from a fascia perspective is that it's not just foam rolling. That was what the hype is about and what you just mentioned. So it's so much more than just foam rolling from a practical perspective, and that's what we're still in the process of learning about. How can we train fascia? How can we work on it manually? What exactly is happening in the tissue? There are still many unanswered questions, and that's what I'm partly working at in the research as well.
So, thank you for explaining that. And for me, it's so fascinating because I read that like everything, if you break it down, was fascia before. Even look at the bones, that they were fascia before. Is that true? So like build out that stuff we call now fascia.
It's not exactly, but they are both connective tissue. So connective tissue is one type of tissue in the body, and that includes bone, it includes cartilage, it includes tendon and ligaments and organ capsules and aponeuroses, so where different muscles attach. But for example, also blood is considered connective tissue. So connective tissue is kind of an umbrella term that also includes solid or hard connective tissue like bone, but it also includes fluid connective tissue such as blood. And then fascia is kind of that in between. So it's soft connective tissue, but it is not as hard as bone, obviously, and it's not as fluid as blood, but it has the same embryological basis, let's say. So it's the same. It's coming all from connective tissue, from the mesenchyme, from an embryological perspective, but it is distinct tissue also when we look at its function.
I like you use the word like Spider-Man costume, so you can imagine like you are Spider-Man. So and like moves with you, and for me it's like lately I figured out that I dealing with childhood trauma, and I did a lot of research according to the nervous system. And just like feeling when you are excited or that fear comes up and you have the tension in your body, I feel like that just like the fascia reacts immediately. So it has a lots of impact. And also, like you said, that it's not only like rolling, that all those we have different aspects and they have different needs. So like maybe some for stretching and some for rolling. And so we like to talk about that. So if someone says, okay, I want to just like fulfill the needs of my fascia, so what can I do?
Yeah, let me answer that in two steps. So the first one was that you mentioned in your lived experience there is a relationship between trauma or nervous system aspects and the fascial tissues. And that's of course a big question that the whole somatic field is addressing or is interested about. And what we do know is that there are relations between fascial tissues and the nervous system. And one big study that I think landed well in the practical field was from Robert Schleip, who is a very dear colleague of mine and who I've collaborated with for many, many years now. And he and Werner Klingler also, who was one of my mentors in my doctoral thesis, they did a study where they found out that certain, let's say, certain stress states or certain chemicals that are being expressed as we are under stress, that they can lead to a tightening or a contraction of the fascia. However, those contractions are not comparable with muscle contraction. So it's a lot smaller. It's not your Popeye biceps move, but it's a much smaller contraction. And also, it usually appears over longer periods of time. So it's not that immediate strong connection that your biceps does, but it can be a contraction that is developing over longer times and holds for a longer period of times, and that can then still impact, for example, your posture or your movement patterns to some degree. So that's the assumption. And there are have then been done some studies where they found that, for example, people with depression, that they have higher stiffness in their neck tissue, so in the trapezius tissue here. And so those are some of the indications that the nervous system stress states, potentially then of course also trauma-related stresses, may manifest in the tissue. But there's a lot of things that we still don't understand. But since those new findings have been published, I would say the whole somatic field has been extremely interested in those tissues.
That's
So
so
yeah, that was the first part, but maybe you want to comment on it before I move on to the second part.
cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and did you want to comment?
You already know. Like what those parts need, like the stretching and the rolling, and so what can we do to like to fulfill the needs?
Yeah, so there's, I mean, it really depends on what you aim to do. So maybe the foam rolling is almost the easiest one to answer. What we know for the foam rolling is if you want to increase your range of motion, so if you want to be able to reach further up, or if you want to move into a bigger stretch. If that's your goal, we know that foam rolling can really be helpful. So especially acutely, so shortly after you roll, you probably are able, or you may be able to move deeper into a certain pose to develop bigger range of motion, and that's a goal for some. And that without having negative impacts on your sports performance. So if you wanted to do that before your sports, let's say you're a hurdle runner, you want range of motion there, otherwise you don't jump over the hurdle, but you don't want to negatively impact your jump ability or your sprint ability, which a static long-held stretch would potentially do, then foam rolling, for example, is a great tool. And that's probably also mediated through the nervous system. So it probably has to do with pain mechanisms in the brain also. That's one. Then it seems to be a great one when it comes to recovery. So your pain perception might be impacted positively by foam rolling. And then also we find that's a little less researched, but from a clinical perspective, from a practical perspective, that it's just also a really great one to downregulate the nervous system if done right. So not if you have like a golf ball digging into the tissue like crazy, like creating resistance in the tissue. That's probably not the way to go if you want to downregulate. But if you use softer tools, if you go about it in a slow way, with like decreased intensities, it can also be a great one to downregulate the nervous system. And that is in part because in your fascia and other tissues, there are sensors that are speaking to the autonomic nervous system, that is, or the parasympathetic nervous system to be more specific, that helps with that downregulation. So that's the assumption, or one other assumption there. So that's what foam rolling is all for, or can be great for, among other things potentially. But we know that fascia training or working with your fascia is not only foam rolling. So it also bears great elastic capacity. So it has like an elastic springiness to it, a recoil ability to it, which you may want to increase if you do a lot of jumping movements. So if you do jump rope hopping or any type of movement where you need a bit of springiness, walking, running, it's a great way to address that springiness in the tissues also. And so a lot of jumping and hopping and those types of movements have also been recommended for the fascia. And yeah, so you have nervous system, you have that elastic springiness to it. You can use many different techniques to speak to the nervous system there to have the down regulatory effect. And then there's a lot of other goals where we don't have specific, let's say, protocols for, where we think the fascial system has links to the immune system, as I mentioned, for example, or also, yeah, let's say with the immune system, but we don't have, from the research at least, specific evidence how to best impact the tissue there. The fluid flow within the tissue appears to be a big one. So we know that fascia has a big water content, and how the quality of that water content matters, and movement and other modalities can im positively impact that.
Like a
And
refreshing, I remember
kind
how
of
you
like a refreshing, yeah.
yeah, it's like you have like sponge, it's like a sponge, and like squeeze it and then you release the
Yeah,
old water
that's
oxygen.
one of the ideas there. And
Yes.
then generally also just working, let's say, against stagnation. So there are ties to the lymphatic system also. So bringing the move, the working on the fluid state of the tissue, and that can of course then again positively impact your range of motion, but for example potentially also your immune system function, etc. But there's still a lot of unknowns, specifically when we want to define protocols or specific recommendations. That's where we're still falling short of, but we get more more valid or more specified hypotheses, I would say, and a lot of interesting research projects exploring those.
I also remember that it's our organs surrounded by that fascia. So I'm wondering if like if we do the deep belly breathing, if this can have an impact. So we stretch that out and then the organs have more space. And so it's
Yeah.
stick.
They stick. Yeah. We do think now that the let's say the you say they have more space. There's probably a little less. In the past, we talked about releasing the fascia as if we could, through one technique, magically release like big adhesion or scar tissue. And that's probably not the case. But what we can do is probably increase the fluid state. So you can imagine if a tissue holds a lot of water, that water can have different qualities. A Or you can compare it to maybe a bottle of ketchup or honey. And if that comes right from the fridge, so if you stand up in the morning or if you're out in the cold, that is a bit more sticky in itself. So, and then if you move or if you do belly breathing, which essentially is a little bit of a movement practice for the belly organs, then those tissues become warmer, and then the ketchup in the bottle is able to move better. So we call that thixotropic effect. So the viscosity of the tissue can change. So that's definitely one change that seems highly likable. And also the quality, how the molecules are structured that hold that water in, they also appear to be able to modifiable. If the collagen fiber, collagen is a protein that gives structure to the fascial tissues. It's also in your bones, but also in your fascia. If we can really release adhesions on a bigger scale in collagenous tissue, so in the collagen fibers themselves, that's a lot more debated these days. So that's what we thought previously, but probably it's not all about the collagen fibers, at least not acutely. It's more about that fluid state in the tissue. And then the collagen fibers and the adhesions between the collagen fibers, that's maybe something we can remodel or work on over longer periods of time. So if you do belly breathing every day, you may be able to impact those collagen structural protein fibers on a longer period or time frame as well.
Thank you. And I remember you mentioned that like it can help when you are probably rolling and you have lots of tension. And I remember that I have an issue with my, it's called the teres minor here. And with when I was a triathlete and I felt like I wasn't able to make my arm really in the long way you need for swimming. And I just like the rolling before the race. Like both sides, and I was able like to move better, so that really helped a lot if you have like guys who like to swim that
Definitely.
really the movement.
Yeah.
And I also do remember that I read once that because I'm very much interested in meridians and like the energetical part of the body, like chakras and meridians, and also like that those we have the meridians in the body, which are like energy lines that going through the body, and that there is a connection to fascia. So we have like that acupressure points where like the doctor like puts the needle in, and that there are really was really interesting to read that there are elementary like centers of the fascia. Could you like say something about that so that there is a connection? So
Yeah. So those meridians stem from traditional Chinese medicine, and they have long tradition and have been applied in practice for a long, long time. And of course, there's always the wish or the aim to kind of find Western medical explanations for why this works. And the fascia has been identified as one potential avenue to explain the mechanisms of acupressure and acupuncture. And when it comes to the points themselves, there have been a couple of studies where on computational models, they try to overlap or see if there's an overlap between the meridians from traditional Chinese medicine and then certain, let's say, fascia planes in the body. And there is a certain overlap. It's not as if you can always directly say, okay, that's now suddenly all of the meridians make sense because there are certain special points or areas in the fascial planes that correlate with that. But there are a couple of studies that have shown a certain overlap to some degree. Another one is again that fluid state. So always there's the matter of the architecture. So where is the meridian and does that correlate with certain fascial planes? That's one question. And the other is, okay, now I've identified a acupressure point or acupuncture point, and I'm putting a needle in, or I'm placing my thumb on it, or a ball on it, or something. And now what is actually happening? So what is changing? And the fluid matrix in the fascia that we just mentioned before, that's also a potential avenue of explaining how then maybe through the fluid matrix, changes in the tissue may hold, may hold place or may happen. And there's some current research that is exploring that. So I think we're not at the end of that avenue of exploring that question, but those are two of the main, I would say, pathways or potential mechanisms that have been looked at in the research. So morphology or architecture, and again, fluid state and changes in the fluid matrix as potential mechanisms.
Yeah, and for me it's so exciting because I think that I mean we're both little like triathletes and we're also like yogis and we're interested like in science and also like that we have maybe things we can't explain in that whole big universe. And we talked about that we wanted to give the podcast the topic like science meets spirituality and to find maybe some connections in between or how can we explain things because I like to grab things. I like to have a picture that I can understand what's going on there. So it's so exciting that there's some kind of evidence, which is not like 100%, but maybe there is some explanation how that could work. And when we are going into the yoga world, we're going into the chakra system, and I'm not sure, I haven't read that study, just like it was in a yoga teacher training, and she said that there are possibilities that you can make that chakras really visible. Do you have any ideas how
Gonna be
that
honest, no
work?
friggin'
Because I feel like so I can feel them. So if I do yoga or just like do energy work, then I feel that there is something. And so when you say like eventually everything connects and we have the universe and like when we say like everything is connected, so what does that mean for you? Not inside the body, just like you are like a tiny little star seed in a wonderful, not maybe understandable universe. So what's your opinion about that?
Different, oh, we could talk about this from so many angles. I'm gonna answer very, very personally, and then I'm gonna put it a bit more into a sciencey context. Personally, that idea of me being a teeny tiny glimpse of time within the huge history of the universe, sometimes, honestly, that's in moments of stress, that's sometimes what grounds me the most. That's my own kind of relativity theory. So putting my own problem into relation of a much grander scheme of things. So to me, that's oftentimes just appreciating the vastness of the universe and all that we don't know, makes my own trouble of the moment oftentimes a lot more bearable or lets me think about it in a different light. So that's very, very simple. Just looking up at the sky or thinking, imagining the vastness of the universe and then seeing my own role in it physically and also in terms of time just grounds me very well. So And then also another thought in that relationship that's a bit closer, so it doesn't even have to be the universe, but our own solar system. I recently, in a novel actually, read a nice, it was phrased very nicely, and she said, or there was that comment that if our Earth was just a couple centimeters closer or further away from the sun, maybe it was meters or something, but if it was just a little bit closer or not as close to the sun, it would either burn us up or we would freeze, or life would not have developed on this planet to that same degree. So it just amazes me that our planet is just in the exact right spot in the universe so that life could have flourished. And that also is sometimes a point where I say, okay, now I'm just sitting out in my garden and just enjoying a moment or a coffee or something, because it's just friggin' crazy that I am here at this point in time, at this point in the universe, at the exact same or at the exact perfect distance from sun, so my life at all is possible. And those are just very practical ways of being spiritual to me. Yeah, so those are some of the personal things. I don't know if you can relate to that well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that I like so Socrates, I also studied philosophy because I wanted to have answers. And I like what he said, I know that I know nothing. I know that I know nothing. So I remember just like when I was in university in psychology and I studied, and then I just like we have a study and then we have results. But when we have the results, we have new questions. So maybe it's like never over.
Never. Yeah, I love that. Let me speak to that a little a moment. And I actually think, starting off what I'm about to say, I think that's the big unifying factor, or the big denominator, common denominator for spirituality and science, is the question, asking the big questions, aiming to understand the big mysteries, the big questions in life. I think that's where we have, there's a lot of connection between spirituality and science, believing in the unknown, even though that sometimes not per like a scientist is not always perceived to believe in the unknown, but that's what a scientist does. A scientist, a researcher, is curious in the open question. It's always developing new open questions. So I think that's a big commonality. And I sometimes start presentations or lectures with a nice image that I stole from Neumeier and Douglas. It's a nice book, by the way. You mentioned I always love recommending books, and that one is Quantum Physics for Hippies. It's also available in German, and they use this analogy, and I love it, and I think it's great. And so they say, imagine you're on an island, right? And that island is the island of knowledge. So all we know is represented by that island. And the island is surrounded by everything we don't know. So that could be the ocean of ignorance or the ocean of the unknown. And of course, compared to the huge, vast ocean, the island is tiny, right? So what we know, what we've established as knowledge, is minor compared to what we don't know. And then the question is, where does the magic happen, right? Where is that mystery in our lives? It's not in the middle of the island, because we know everything there. Everything's familiar. It's not as mystical. It's not as mysterious. But probably the mystery and the magical also doesn't happen like way out in the ocean, because way out in the ocean, there are concepts that don't relate to any experience we have, or don't relate to anything we know or we can associate with. So it's probably somewhere in between. And a scientist would probably say the mystery happens at the beach. So it's right at that edge between what we know and what we don't know. And then the idea of science is to look at one sand, grain of sand at a time, and it's like establishing one sand grain at a time and create more knowledge. And then what you said holds true. If I create more sand, I make the island bigger, so the beach line is longer. So actually, I create more mystery, because that area of beachfront or beach line is actually becoming bigger. So I'm creating more questions. I'm creating more mystery and more magic, actually, by extending the beach line. So that's maybe a paradox, but I like that. And I think that's what, yeah. And I think, to me, that resonates so much. And I also like understanding or digging into those sand grains and creating knowledge or understanding things. And I think that's what science is for. And then I think where spirituality is maybe sometimes understood to be a little different, or not even spirituality, but just the individual experience of humans or phenomenology, which is not explored in the research yet, is some people like to look like a bit further out into the ocean. And then we're immediately confronted with the fact that there are things that we can't measure, or that there are things we cannot even conceptualize at this point in time. And of course, I, as a researcher, and also just from my own personal mindset, I will never say, no, that's not possible. Out in the ocean doesn't exist. I am very much aware that the ocean exists and that what we know is very small. And my worldview is not limited to the sand on the beach. My worldview very much includes a broad, vast ocean and an appreciation for all that's unknown. But the way of how a researcher goes about it is one grain of sand at a time. And then sometimes people that are maybe more identifying as being spiritual and not as convinced of the scientific method, they may perceive that to be reductionist. And others like, but a researcher will just use that way, or that method of studying, testing theories. That's just the way that has developed. And I think that's where it's a bit different, but I think the big commonality is that we can both appreciate the ocean. I think that's sometimes misunderstood, that a scientist or that science in itself doesn't appreciate the big wide ocean and the unknown. It's my bit about it. It's not a scientific opinion, it's my personal opinion, but I like that analogy.
So, I don't know what your sketch look like. I think we have to come closer to the end because you have to move on. And I remember that you wrote a book. I don't know if it's out now. Maybe you want to tell the audience about that book you've
Yeah,
written.
it's gonna be a couple more weeks. It'll come out in November, and it's actually about female health, or females and female lifestyle. So it's about female hormones across the lifespan, so during the reproductive years, but also during pregnancy and postpartum, and also throughout the menopausal transition. And what I aim to do there as well is to kind of put all the research, or at least some of the research that's out there, into perspective, because I think it's kind of like a hot topic right now. It's being discussed a lot on social media. And whenever that happens, we tend to be a bit less, or social media cannot be super nuanced, right? It has to be a
Yes.
short post. That's just the nature of things. And I think some of the nuance currently in the current social media discussion gets lost. And what I'm trying to do there is to, again, translate the research that's out there on sports, on training, on nutrition, on sleep, and all of those parameters, some psychological aspects, into language that's well understood, but still makes it clear where the state of the research is. So that's what the book is trying to do. And it's coming out in November, I believe, on the 25th.
It's pretty cool. So can people pre-order the book?
I do think it's available. It is on Amazon already. I know that. I
So
would
you
have to
can
check. I haven't checked in a while, but it's
write down
definitely,
to Amazon.
you
Type
can find it.
in the title and then you order it. Very easy.
Yes.
So where can people find you? You have a website, you're on Instagram, you're on Facebook, you're on LinkedIn. You had a podcast? I don't know.
All of the places. Yeah. So I'm on Instagram. That's Katya underscore. Is it underscore in English? M underscore B. I am on LinkedIn. I have a website which is called kalamanayoga.com. I also am part of the yoga medicine podcast team and teaching team. So that's again a role that I love filling, is to bring some of the research and discuss with Tiffany Cruikshank, who's the founder, how we can apply that in practice, or how that's relevant for us in practice in the yoga world, in the yoga realm. And you can find me there as well. So happy to connect with anyone who loves chatting all the topics that we started to discuss about. We could talk for hours, I assume, about all of these things that we just mentioned.
Thank you so much for your time and for your energy. And I was just like wondering when we just like have like a final last comment to make the thing round that we mentioned in the beginning, how just like we met and how the path was. And so we could never have that conversation if we just like both didn't walk down our path. So maybe this was just like the universe said, now in this time, I'm going to have that conversation. This is for me really amazing, and that gives sense to life. So
Yeah, that connection part of it, I think that's what many of us are craving when we speak about spirituality, right? The part of it is what can I connect with and how can I make meaningful connections? I think that's part of that bigger question. And I think walking a common path, even though you don't see each other on a daily basis, gives us very much sense of connection and of meaningfulness. And I love that. And that's part of that. Eventually everything connects. That's part of that as well. When things come together and they feel they resonate with each other, I think that's just the greatest feeling. So that's why I love that saying so much.
absolutely. And so we are in that, like, would say, like, ventral state of the nervous system to have that connection. That's what we people need. We need really true connections. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And have a really great day. Enjoy your family, your work, your curiosity. Thank
Same
you.
to you.
Hello and aloha. Bye.
Bye.